circuits. So I thought I would tell you about the only thing that I understand, which is the simple harmonic oscillator, and try to teach you a little bit about what is a photon. So when you take your first advanced quantum mechanics course and you learn about quantizing the electromagnetic field, it's infinitely confusing because there's an infinite number of degrees of freedom, and you haven't seen that before, and I still have trouble with it. But in an electrical circuit, you can arrange things so there's just a single degree of freedom, effectively. So suppose I have an inductor with inductance L and a capacitor with capacitance C. And I imagine the wires are superconducting, so there's no resistance, no dissipation of energy when the current, when the electrons move. And I'm going to say to you, this has a 1 degree of freedom, this circuit, even though it contains 10 to the 15 electrons. So how can I say to you it has just 1 degree of freedom, which could, for example, be the labeled by the charge on the plates of the capacitor? And the reason I can argue that is there are two reasons. One is it's a superconductor. So there's an excitation gap for breaking Cooper pairs. Electrons are traveling around together in spin singlets, bound tightly together, and they don't have, it's no longer an ordinary Fermi C where you could make small changes in momentum of the electrons and get all kinds of low energy excitations. There's a big gap. A gap which will take to be much bigger than the temperature and much bigger than the frequency of this oscillator. But then those Cooper pairs, that's not enough, it turns out. Those Cooper pairs could get denser and less dense. There could be kind of sound waves where currents don't all flow and uniformly in this wire, but density builds up and down. And you could have, you know, wave-like degrees of freedom in those wires. And the reason those are not important is because of the extremely strong Coulomb repulsion. The long-range Coulomb force raises the frequency of those density oscillations up to what's called the plasma frequency. Which is related to the charge density divided by the electron mass. And that in aluminum, that frequency is in the ultraviolet. That's why at visible light frequencies, aluminum is shiny and reflects all the waves, because the electromagnetic waves cannot penetrate into that plasma. So in the end, there really is only one low energy degree of freedom, which is the charges uniformly and rigidly sliding back and forth. And the charge cannot build up anywhere in this wire except right there where there's two plates very close together and lots of capacitance. Does that make sense? So I could choose, if I wanted, Q to be the coordinate of what's going to turn out to be a harmonic oscillator. Okay? So we want to write down the Hamiltonian and quantize it and see that the excitations of this correspond to photons in some funny sense. So the only sure and safe way to get to the Hamiltonian is to start with the Lagrangian. Okay? So something I've learned with great pain over the years. So there's the kinetic energy minus the potential energy. And so, I know what the potential energy is. It's the Coulomb energy stored in that capacitor. So that's that. And that looks like the spring constant of a harmonic oscillator with coordinate Q and spring constant 1 over C. And then I have the energy stored in the inductor, which is 1/2 L times the current squared. But that's not quite the right way to write the Lagrangian, because the Lagrangian is supposed to be a function of the coordinate and the velocity. But we know that the current flowing in, if I define my, I have to choose a direction, so let's say this way. The current flowing here by charge conservation is making the charge build up. And so the current actually is the velocity of the particle whose coordinate is Q. And now you immediately see I really do have a harmonic oscillator. The mass is the inductance. The spring constant is 1 over the capacitance. So now I find the conjugate momentum, and sometimes you call it P or pi, but with malice aforethought, I'm going to name it phi. So it's the variation of the Lagrangian with respect to the velocity. And that's equal to L Q dot, which is Li, which is the magnetic flux inside the inductor, right? The inductance times the current is the magnetic flux passing through the inductor. And Faraday induction says that the voltage drop across the inductor is the time rate of change of the flux up to a minus sign that may or may not be there depending on your sign convention. So the flux and charge are canonically conjugate. Flux is the momentum conjugate to the charge Q. So when we quantize it, they're not going to commute with each other. Okay, so then the Hamiltonian, which is phi Q dot minus L, and now you're supposed to express it not in terms of Q and Q dot, but Q and phi, just turns into okay, so it's the kinetic energy is the momentum squared divided by twice the mass. And the potential energy is the position squared times 1/2 times the spring constant. Everybody okay with that? Now I'm going to quantize the theory. That's how you quantize a harmonic oscillator, by turning those guys into operators, and the commutate that don't commute. And the commutation relation between the momentum and the conjugate to the coordinate Q and that is minus IH bar. Or, you know, in the position representation of quantum mechanics, just as momentum is ddx, now it's ddq here. Okay? And it's the usual, so how do we, you know how to solve this, you need to define some creation and raising and lowering operators that are combinations of P and X or phi and q in this case, which diagonalize this Hamiltonian. And so we can do that. Just again, remembering the Heisenberg uncertainty principle that things that don't commute are not compatible observables. You can't know both their values precisely. You can't measure the charge on the capacitor and the flux through the inductor with perfect precision. So, I'm not sure if I want to waste the time to derive correctly the expression for the there's some coefficient here, and x plus ip or p plus ix turns into an A and an A dagger, and the Hamiltonian turns out to be H bar omega A dagger A plus a half, where A dagger A is the number x that has integer eigenvalues and is the number of quanta of excitation in the oscillator, and the half is zero-point energy. And so the claim is that I should interpret A dagger acting on the ground state as giving me one photon, as creating a photon. So we're used to thinking about photons. We're used to thinking about electromagnetic waves in a box, and maybe first time you see this, you quantize the electromagnetic field in a box, but it's very confusing because there's an infinite number of modes of the box. This guy only has one mode with frequency omega, and by the way, when you work it out, that frequency is the classical oscillation frequency, 1 over square root of LC. In what sense is there a photon in this system when it's in the excited state? Well, imagine, I added I'm in the ground state, and then I shift the charge around. So I put some charge here and take away some charge there, and then I let it go. Classically, it begins to oscillate, and there's an electric field that lives here, and that this flux comes from the magnetic field that lives inside there. So it's not like the electromagnetic waves in the vacuum where the E and B are living in the same place. Electric field is in one lumped element of the circuit, and the magnetic field is another lumped element of the circuit. But it's still, you can say that that excitation corresponds to a photon. And there's a certain zero-point electric field, so even in the ground state, and it gets bigger in the excited states. Okay. So it's useful to do something that's not ordinarily done when you just learn about photons. You learn about creation and annihilation operators, which create and destroy photons, and A dagger A, which counts the number of photons, and each one gives you an energy H bar omega. But you could also think about this from a little known method, as we like to say, called first quantization. You can think about wave functions for this oscillator. So if you weren't thinking about photons and so forth, you could use as a coordinate of this oscillator either the charge, which is what I've been using, or the electric field at some point in space. That could perfectly good coordinate for this oscillator there. It's linearly related to the charge. So let's think about the charge. So I could certainly think about the wave function for this system possibly containing photons. And it would be a function of the position coordinate of this fake particle, namely the charge or the electric field. Okay? And we know what the ground state wave function for harmonic oscillator is. It's a Gaussian. With some normalization constant and some variance, which is the 0-point fluctuations of the charge. And there's a 1/4 there instead of a 1/2 because it's psi squared that determine you use when you calculate the probability distribution for Q. So I can think of charge or electric field here. So what is the average electric field in the vacuum? It's zero. I mean, this is completely symmetric. So the average charge or the average electric field by symmetry will be zero. The most probable electric field is zero, but if you look, there's some chance that there's a vacuum noise, some 0-point fluctuation in the vacuum in which electric field will appear. And in the microwave electrical circuits that I'm going to be talking about in the colloquium, that electric field's actually corresponds to microvolt voltages across the capacitor plate. So it's not so small. And it's measurable. If I had the first excited state, the wave function is some other or a normalization constant times the coordinate times the same Gaussian. So that wave function looks like that. And if I squared it, it would, look like that. So what is the probability that there's zero electric field when you're in the one photon state? It's zero because the wave function has no probability there. The most probable electric field is some number, some finite number. But you don't know whether the electric field is equally likely to be positive as negative. So on average, the electric field is still zero. So the electric field in the vacuum state and the electric field in the one photon state are on average zero. So how do I think about what happened to the picture of kind of classical oscillations on electric field turning into magnetic field and back into electric field? Well, I remind you that when you have systems in eigenstates of the Hamiltonian in quantum mechanics, they're called stationary states for a reason. Nothing is changing. The only way anything can move in quantum mechanics is if it has indefinite energy, if it's in a superposition state of different energy eigenstates. So if you were in a state like this, that's not an eigenstate. It changes with time because this part evolves in time at a rate different from that. So the phase of the superposition changes. And so you could have, for instance, this plus this, and the net effect would be some wave function which is asymmetric to the right. You're more likely to have positive electric field than negative electric field. So there's an expectation value electric field. And after some time, as this evolves, after half a period of the classical oscillation, there'll be a minus sign here, and the electric field will be more likely to be over there. So we've actually done, and my colleagues, I shouldn't say we, my experimental colleagues at Yale have done an experiment in which they have an artificial atom, which I'll talk about. It's basically an LC oscillator like this, except it's anharmonic. It's in an excited state. It falls down, and it emits a photon into a cavity. And then they just put a very sensitive microwave receiver there and ask, what is the electric field from that single photon? And on average, it's zero by symmetry. Same thing if they leave the atom in the ground state and there's no photon, then, of course, there's also no electric field. But if you start with the qubit in the ground state and you apply a pulse to it, you can start, it's a two-level system, so it's equivalent to the Hilbert space of a spin a half. You can rotate that spin. If you rotate it through pi, it's in the excited state. If you rotate it through pi over 2, it's in an equal superposition of ground and excited state. And so if I get in a superposition with a pi over 2 rotation, then I have this situation, and I actually have some electric field. And you can measure today with modern experimental methods. You can measure the electric field associated with a superposition of 0 and 1 microwave photons. You have to do the experiment many times and average to overcome noise, but it's doable. So what you find as a function of the rotation angle through which you rotate the qubit, at zero, the average electric field is zero. And at pi, the average electric field is also zero. But at pi over 2, it's a maximum. And when you go around the other way, you change the sign of this superposition, and the electric field changes sign. So you can show that what's called a photon Fox state that's a state that's an eigenstate of the number operator. So it has zero photons or one photon or two photons. All of those states, which are the energy eigenstates, have zero electric field on average. But the superposition of 0 and 1 states can have an electric field, and you can actually measure it. Okay? Questions about that? Yeah?
So if you say 0 is the 0 photon state,
yeah.
1 is the 1 photon state, so what does the zero position?
Well, it means that if you measure, okay, that's a good question. So suppose I'm in this state, and I measure the electric field, I'll get some number on average. It fluctuates from experiment to experiment. I'm just telling you the expectation value of the electric field. But let's say suppose I measure N, which is a dagger A. I want to measure the photon number. Then with probability alpha squared, I'll get the result 0. And with probability beta squared, I'll get the result 1. So it'll be it doesn't have definite photon number, and so the results are random, but quantum mechanics can't tell you the result of any one experiment, but they can tell you the statistics, the probability that you'll get zero or one. So there's one other special kind of state that'll be useful to know about for today's talk, which is a coherent state. It's the closest thing to having, here's my harmonic oscillator. Oh, here's a better harmonic oscillator. The closest thing to the classical state that you get by just, okay, this one's heavily damped, obviously, displacing the oscillator and letting it go so it swings back and forth. What's the quantum version of that? Well, it's a special, I mean, the most general state is a superposition with some amplitudes of 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 photons. That's a basis that you can express any state. But coherent states are something special. So let's remind ourselves classically what the oscillation of the oscillator does. So let me solve the equation of motion for the position, let's say. I'm going to see if I can. The mass is L omega. So if I, we know that the harmonic oscillator just oscillates sinusoidally, and the position classically starts at some initial value, Q of zero, oscillates with a cosine omega t, and the velocity, so Q at, or let me call this Q naught and I naught. Q at time zero is Q naught, and Q dot at time zero is phi naught over L, which is the initial momentum divided by the mass, which is the initial velocity. That's the usual solution. It's also the solution for the Heisenberg operators in the quantum case. Yeah?
I was wondering if, so you can basically choose any inductance or capacitance that you want. So
yep.
If you have enough of these devices, can you make a laser out of them?
People have made lasers out of these structures, but you need something besides harmonic oscillators. A laser involves multi-level atoms with not equally spaced levels.
Okay.
And you incoherently put them in the third level. They spontaneously emit and fall down to the second level. And then together, they all coherently fall down from the second to the first.
So in principle, could you add enough circuit elements and string them together so that you could make a high-frequency laser out of these devices?
People have made lasers out of these devices in the microwave regime, but it has to be more than just harmonic oscillators.
Okay.
So you can talk about, when you have an arbitrary sinusoidally varying thing, you can have a phasor representation where you treat this number and this number as a pair of coordinates in a two-dimensional plane or as a complex number. and called the quadrature components, and confusingly, they're called I and Q, not for current and charge, but in phase and out of phase quadrature components. So there's some, a classical coherent state is just defined by some phasor vector where this is Q and that's I. Again, not charge and current. And we've removed the extremely rapid, in this case, 5 billion time per second oscillations of this electromagnetic oscillator by making these guys be slowly varying and putting the fast time oscillations there. So what is the quantum mechanical analog of having an oscillator that has a definite phase of motion? You started it with at maximum amplitude at a certain time. Well, it's going to look a lot like this, but it's going to have a little bit of fuzziness around it because the position and momentum don't commute with each other. You can't know them both precisely. And so a coherent state, alpha, can be, this turns out to be the answer. It's a giant superposition of different numbers of photon states. This is just a boring normalization factor. But let's expand this thing out. It's 1 plus alpha a dagger plus a half alpha squared a dagger plus and let me remind you, so that's going to give us 0 plus alpha times the one photon state plus 1 half alpha squared. And it turns out that this doesn't just give the two photon state, but actually the square root of 2 factorial times the two photon state, etc. And so you end up with this special superposition of Fock states is the closest thing you can come to a classical swinging harmonic oscillator. And this is the only kind of state that's easy to make. I buy an Agilent signal generator that sends out microwaves. I send them down a wire to my some sort of high-frequency cavity, and the Agilent generator is some classical signal source, and I drive this cavity into a coherent state whose frequency and phase and amplitude depend on the settings I made on the signal generator. Okay? Now, there is some zero-point motion of the electric field inside my system. And that's going to lead, if I were to measure the electric field, it would only be the classical value on average. There are going to be fluctuations around it. And the fluctuations this way make it a little bit hard for me to know exactly what the phase of the wave is. And the fluctuations this way make it a little bit hard for me to know the length of the phasor. And the square of the length of the phasor is the number of photons. It's the energy in the wave. And so you end up getting, if you have n bar photons on average, then the fluctuations in the number of photons, if you were to measure it, goes like square root of n. They're Poisson distributed. And it comes about because of the interference between the classical signal. What the classical drive does is it just takes the vacuum and it displaces it up there. And you get interference between the classical signal and the vacuum noise. And that's what produces shot noise, the when you count the number of photons inside, it can be random. So those are interesting states, but they're kind of boring. So what I'm going to talk about in the talk is how to make really bizarre states, non-classical states, which you need much more than just a signal generator. You need something anharmonic, like a two-level quantum atom or superconducting circuit element to make. And one of the kinds of states that I'll talk about is a superposition called a cat state. In which the oscillator might have this phase in amplitude or the opposite phase in amplitude at the same time. So there's a blob here and there's a blob over there. And if you open the box and look, if you measure the phase of the oscillation, it'll randomly half the time be this and randomly half the time will be that. But it's not a mixture because there's a definite phase in that superposition. And one way that you can see that, there are interference effects, and I'll show pictures of that. But one way to see that is to say, okay, let's go back to this language, and let's think about what a coherent state looks like. Coherent state is just, let's say I make a coherent state where I just displace Q, the charge, and leave that zero, then the wave function just becomes, I just displace my harmonic oscillator and then let it go. Right, and it'll start oscillating. So now a cat state, I've displaced in both directions at the same time. I have some weird psi of Q, which is perfectly symmetric between Q and minus Q. So if you think about it, that means it can only be made up of the even functions, right? The 0, 2, 4, 6, 8 photon states are all even parity, and the 1, 3, 5, 7 are all odd parity. Like there's even and there's odd. So this can only be made up of even. So this is sum on n, some amplitudes, n, and n is even. And you can measure how many photons are in there, and I'll show you pictures showing, indeed, it's always even. If you put a minus sign here, then it turns out it's always odd. Then there are other kind of interference measurements you can make to prove that you don't just have a random classical mixture of these two possibilities, but they're both there at the same time and have some definite quantum amplitude.
If I had two of these things, I gather I could entangle them so that the photon number that you would measure in one is somehow strangely correlated
yes.
to the photon number in the other.
Yes, that's going to be the next experiment, I think, that we do. So imagine I have two cavities, and I'm going to have some non-local entanglement in which I have alpha plus minus alpha. So in other words, both cavities have their amplitudes this way, or both cavities have their amplitudes that way. And if I measure only in one cavity, I'll just see a strange mixture between those two possibilities, but none of these interference effects. It's a weird, this is non-locality thing of entanglement. And it turns out if you have a little qubit that can connect those two cavities, you can drive them into this non-local cat state. OK, I think I probably should go see if my computer works. Thanks.
Thank you very much.